The following is Stephen Anderson's closing keynote, Micro Moments, Tiny Interactions with Big Payoffs, from UX Thursday Chicago. UX Thursday is brought to you by UIE and Vitamin T. For more information and for future UX Thursday events, visit uxthursday.com. That's uxthursday.com.
All right, so I do a lot of product strategy and design work, primarily with startups. I do like day and two-day consulting gigs with larger companies and then longer-term multi-month projects with startups. That's what I've been doing for the last 3 or 4 years. Going back for about 10 years, I've been working primarily with web applications and more recently mobile apps and tablet apps and things like that. My focus area and a lot of the context for what I'm going to talk about today is comes from thinking about transactional engagements or transactional applications, not necessarily websites or content sites. So that's kind of a qualifier for what I'm about to talk about. I work a lot with startups, and more recently I've been working a lot with edtech startups and healthcare startups, and I've been doing a lot more data viz and info viz visualization type of work. So that just gives you a little background, a little context on what I've been doing. One thing I've noticed, though, is working with a lot of startups and then a lot of bigger companies, having worked inside some enterprise companies, I think that startups have it easy, and I don't say that lightly, because there's a lot that goes with a startup. You're taking someone's money, you're trying something new, and the chances are you're going to fail. It's not going to work because you are pioneering something new. So I don't want to disregard that at all. But when compared to a lot of the larger companies that I've worked with, or even companies that cross that like 20-person threshold and start to get into a small company, medium company, that size, that's when a lot of the common sense stuff goes out the window, and you have processes to manage things, and you have priorities, and you have regulations, all this stuff. So in a way, I think startups have it a lot easier, those early days, early seed stage startups. Just out of curiosity, so I know who I'm speaking to, how many of you work at a startup with less than or fewer than, say, 12 people? Okay, a few of you? All right. So you may think, this is common sense stuff that I'm going through today, but trust me, it'll be really useful when you grow and scale and add a few more people, and then this stuff will become even more important, trust me. The reason being is, as you get more people, that's when you need more of this documentation. So throughout the past several years, there have been conversations about various forms of documentation. Personas, for example. Are personas valuable? Are they not? And it's always very binary, and my answer has always been, well, it depends on the organization and how many people are involved. So with the startups I work at, I don't think I've yet done a persona project. But when I worked with some of these larger companies, particularly a travel company where there were 50 different stakeholders, not people on the team, but stakeholders who had a decision, they didn't agree on who the persona was or who the user was. So in that case, personas were incredibly critical just to get alignment. So you have things like that, documentation that you need as you get more people. You also have, as you scale, you get more and more complex problems. So you get more features. And even if you try to hold to a simple philosophy and you try to say no and cut, there are very legitimate customer requests that will come in and look, if we want to close this deal, and we do, you know, we need to add these two features. And that starts to compromise what was a very elegant experience. And now you've got to figure out, how can I support these new feature requests but not compromise on our values and our vision and where we want to go? And then, of course, there's the legacy thing. So as a startup, you have a blank slate. You can pick the latest and greatest framework, the technology. But even a year or 2 years later, the stuff you're choosing is already, you know, getting kind of crusty and dated. And there's other things that are better, other technologies that are faster or more flexible. So you got the legacy stuff to support. So that's why I say startups have it easy. What I'm going to share today, it's really a very simple, very fundamental idea. And it's something you're all probably familiar with. But it's an idea that I've found, one, helps other people see problems when maybe they don't. Maybe you see them, but they don't. So it's good for internal communication and getting on the same page. But two, it's helped me work through some really tricky interaction details. Things where I was like, I don't know how to resolve this UI. This exercise has proved really helpful for that. And again, with everything, your mileage may vary, but I've found consistently this idea, this approach, has really helped me through a lot of situations. And the idea is very simple. Treat interactions as conversations. That's the idea. Treat the interactions we design as conversations. So think of the person or the user or the customer having a conversation with the device, with the company, or through the device. This, by the way, was kind of the frame or the mental model that I used when I wrote my book, Seductive Interaction Design. And I was looking at that first time engagement or that first time interaction between a person visiting a site or an app for the first time, and what happens, and looking at it through the lens of dating, and how are we attracted to other people? What are the things a person does to make themselves more attractive or desirable or seductive? So before I get into some of the really good examples, I thought it'd be kind of interesting to start off with some interesting conversations I've had lately online. I didn't cherry pick these. These are types of things I encounter on a weekly, sometimes daily basis. And I wouldn't be doing this talk if I didn't see so many interesting conversations happening all the time. So this was a few months back. I was submitting for a workshop at a conference, and there was a list of form fields. This is just one field, right? I'm just putting one field in the microscope here. And it said workshop capacity. So they want me to give them an idea of how many people I can accommodate in this workshop. It has a wider field, so about 18 or 19 characters. So I figure I can write anything I want in there. And there's no real easy way to put a hard number in here. So I put, 40-ish, right? And when I got to the bottom of the form, hit submit, this one turned red. It basically screamed at me and said, please enter a numeric value. It's like, oh, I guess it didn't like the letters. So I removed the letters and I put 30 to 40, which it didn't like. And I put 35, question mark, it didn't like that. And then finally I said 35. Now, had this been a conversation, one, the person would have accommodated my very first answer, right? They wouldn't have said, try again, and they would have accommodated my answer, right? Second, had I gone through this process, maybe they had to go through it and they're entering it for you or something, they would have apologized, right? So I didn't feel like an idiot or feel bad because I'm not conforming to their system. But anyway, looking through this lens of conversation, this was really bad. There's things they could have done to fix this. By the way, 18 to 20 characters, does that suggest they want a 2 or 3 number answer? Just, all right. Here's another one. So this one's really kind of sneaky or creepy. So I'm filling out this field and it says, completing this field gives us permission to contact.